Hello, hello, and welcome to the CBETS podcast. We're your hosts, Georgina Piltz.
And Ruben Cervantes.
And today we're going to continue our conversation about the Ministry of Reconciliation. Now, sometimes these words are a little bit confusing and we somehow are able to put our own spin on what these words mean. But we want to really dive in and understand the biblical meaning of the Spirit of Reconciliation and the ministry of that. And so to help us, really, is a beautiful couple, Rick and Kirsten Bowden. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
So, Kirsten, we had you a couple of weeks ago.
Yes.
Or a couple of, I'm not even sure how long.
A few podcast episodes ago.
It was so fun. It was so fun having you. And you were just able to bare your heart and you brought so much biblical content to the conversation that we're having. And it was so enjoyable. But for those of you who didn't listen, why don't you guys just give us a little bit of a background of who you are, where you're from, what you do?
Sure. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, my name is Rick, and I am the father of two beautiful kiddos, Nazari and Zion.
Oh, that's cool.
And
I like Nazari.
Yeah. And so Kirsten and I moved here in 2016 to do an internship with the House of Prayer. Shortly thereafter, came on staff. And served there for a little bit, and around 2017 went back to traditional work, and we've just been serving and loving being in the House of Prayer, and
that's awesome.
Yeah, being blessed.
Yeah, and I've seen obviously, Kirsten, we've interacted with you a lot.
Yeah,
helped us with the symposium. You've been on some podcast episodes, but you guys have been helping with some of the stand conferences.
Yes.
Obviously, around this this conversation of race and ethnicity, you guys have been very involved in helping us parse that as a community. And so it just felt right to have you guys come on this podcast and let's keep having this conversation, because I believe the last time we had this, there was a flashpoint moment, right? There was the George Floyd controversy, Ahmaud Arbery. There's several different situations going on at the same time. And it was like, oh, we need to talk about it.
Yeah.
But now, I mean, it's still happening, but it's not so loud on the national scale. It's probably about to be. It just depends on, you know, how the ebbs and flows of those kinds of things happen.
Yeah.
And the political energy behind it, too, tends to have a contribution to it. So, but as a church, we need to talk about this. You know, I keep on thinking about Acts chapter 6, you know, the Hellenized Hellenistic widows and the Hebrew widow, and just some of the injustices you began to see in there. Of course, Acts 15, there's a real controversy, like, can Gentiles be saved? Like, you know, like there was a racial issue happening in the first century church, and there was, the church had, I mean, the scriptures have something to say about it.
Absolutely.
And so the reason we wanted, you guys have been really staring at this from a very biblical perspective, with real pain, with real issues related to, you know, experiencing the injustices, but yet with real hope and real commitment to the promises of Scripture.
Sure.
So we started our this series on the Ministry of Reconciliation, looking at 2 Corinthians chapter 5 and verse 18 and so forth, and realizing that, okay, the Ministry of Reconciliation is God reconciling us to himself, right? And so basically this ministry is preaching the gospel, making disciples.
Yeah.
And that then has an overflow. And one of those things is the family coming together. So that's kind of a general overview. And we want to just kind of dive into this. I know next podcast episode, you guys have agreed to jump back in with us, which we're excited about that continuation of our conversation. But could you help me understand from your perspective, right, as an African-American couple, what's going on? What has always been, what hasn't always been, just a general synopsis of where you see we are right now, you know, in September 2020.
There's a lot of angst. It's a lot of raw emotion, a lot of anger. A lot of, in many cases, a sense of hopelessness, because for many who are in my generation and my parents' generation and their parents' generation, say, who are still living in memory of a lot of the very real injustices that happened, let's just say in the 50s, in the 60s, in the 70s. My father actually was one who marched with civil rights leaders. And so when you see these flashpoints, it immediately begins to stir up a lot of the pain. You have people who are in memory of their relatives being lynched, being pulled over, needlessly, and at least might have been taken to jail or beaten for just being black. Yeah. And so those are the types of things that are stirred up in the pain, and even within Christian communities, how they had to navigate the challenges of this. You can imagine being in the church in Alabama when those four little girls died because of the Ku Klux Klan planting a bomb in the church. It was a normal day, normal Sunday. And I think the youth were putting on or helping to lead the service. And all of a sudden, you have this bomb that goes off in the church, and you have children in the wake of that. These are the things that people are remembering in light of George Floyd getting shot, in light of Ahmaud Arbery, in light of Trayvon. These are the things that are, so it's not the events themselves. It's all of the implications of those events and the history that's behind all of that.
Yeah. It's like, would you say it's as if people have tried to just put a Band-Aid on some of the really painful things that have happened, but actually, wait, we see this happening again. That Band-Aid is now ripped off. Wait, there is still this massive wound
exactly.
that is open.
Exactly.
Gosh.
Yes. And which is one of the reasons why why black people, I'm gonna differentiate the term black community and black believers. But generally why we are such a communal type of people is because of enduring those types of things. Let's say, you know, you were walking down the street and all of a sudden you hear bombs going off, and you just knew two blocks away your friend or your aunt, they just, for no reason, you know. So those are the types of things that really bound the community together, and church and was one of those places and one of those contexts where people would find hope together and find a sense of fueling for action together. But what is tragic for me is that so much of the hope that we talk about is not actually put in Jesus. Okay. It's so much of that hope is lying in doing something, taking action, being woke, or educating yourself, you know. So those are some of the types of things that are really stirring. And so when you are observing Christians, non-Christians alike who are confused and angry, that's kind of what's fueling it more so than the events themselves.
Okay. Let me ask a question, if I may. Like when Barack was voted into office, did it kind of feel like there was a solution to the promises? Like you're mentioning how it can sometimes feel like the black community Christian believers are starting to put hope, not necessarily just in prayer, but in their own actions. And so did it kind of feel like when he was voted in, wait, here is our answer, here is a solution, which is separate from the Bible? Do you know what I'm
saying? Oh, absolutely. They made Barack the savior.
Yeah.
I heard more even from relatives of mine, you know, that they talked more about Obama and his policies and even their family dynamics. I mean, there are pictures of the Obama family all over the house in books. I mean, they, in a sense, they've idolized the Obama family in office and out. And so even since they've transitioned from, you know, public service, you know, lots of people are still saying, Barack, my president, you know, because of what he represents.
Yeah.
A lot of people, Christian and non-Christian alike, were putting all of their hope in him and what he represented, which was massibly unhealthy.
Yeah, I feel like that's happened for many years. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. America is so 100%. Prosperous and so blessed. We're in this weird window of incredible prosperity that it made people feel like the answers to our existential questions were found in the temporary wealth creation and access to opportunity. And I'm talking about the white majority here. But I remember hearing about Ronald Reagan in the same manner you just described.
Kennedy,
or mm-hmm. you look at Clinton, the Bushes. I mean, it's like every presidency, there is this thing that says, here is my Messiah. And right. No, they'll never say it that way, obviously. But that's the problem that I've had with this. And I'm going to start getting edgy. I know this is very controversial topic, but we got to have or else we're in trouble.
Yes.
But honestly, I look at social media posts, and I have to practice the discipline of restraint, because there's like anything I say, it's like as a shepherd, as a teacher, as a leader, as a friend, as a brother, like anything I say will be held against me, and not in a court of law, but in a court of public opinion, and not that that matters to me as much, but then it's like, well, then why waste my time with these, you know, these worthless arguments? Mm-hmm. But then it's like, but there's real issues behind these arguments that are poorly said, you know, like, you know, Black Lives Matter, and from a simple phrase, you read that phrase. Black Lives Matter, and somebody asked me, do Black Lives Matter? My answer is absolutely, like all lives matter. And then I just said the buzzword, the wrong thing, you know, to attach Black Lives Matter with the phrase all lives matter, all of a sudden I'm criminalized, you know? And it's like, and then it's like, well, no, Black Lives Matter is an organization that's founded with communist, or I forget what the
Marxist
thing is, Marxist ideologies. Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh gosh, okay, I need to preach the gospel. That's my assignment. Mm-hmm. Why are we parsing out? Everyone's just trying to wear their pain, mm-hmm. because it's real pain. And it's like, no matter how you engage with it, you're saying it wrong to someone. Yeah. And that's why I've had to stare at this, the scriptures, mm-hmm. because there's so much information, but no answers. There's so many opinions, but no truth. Mm-hmm. And all I've got to go by is this, the scriptures.
Yeah.
And I see massive injustice here.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. You know, Esther, the queen, we make her this amazing queen, you know, like, oh yeah, she was just so regal, and like she was a victim of human trafficking, you know, mm-hmm. like, and there's so much injustice, and that we've made into this imperialistic ideology that, you know, we're overcoming from a position of power. So having this conversation about race, about inequality, like I neither want to diminish the reality of it, mm-hmm. as a believer, as a Christian, as a brother, nor do I want to exalt the hope of eradicating injustice in our own strength. Like, according to the scriptures, only Jesus will do that in the end. So what is our role today? And you, if I may be so bold to ask, as a black couple, what can I do as another minority? And what can my wife do as an American, a white girl? What can we do to stand with you in this time as a community of faith?
Sure. I mean, I think, so I have to answer your first question to answer your second. What is the experience right now being an African-American couple, African-American community? We're a community, you and I together.
Community
with
of four. Perfect.
Yes. an African-American couple. And I think the invitation for believers, whatever your ethnicity, every day is to kind of step forward and choose which narrative you're going to find identity in. And it's a daily thing. The way the Lord gives new mercies daily, it's for a reason. Yeah. It's because there are so many things that you can put your hope in. It could be the gospel of Jesus Christ and being a citizen of the kingdom of heaven, which is a right now and future reality, right? And kind of getting caught up in pieces of that, or in the counsel of man and the hope of this age. And, you know, there's death in that, and there are even pitfalls as you're navigating what it looks like to be a citizen of the kingdom of heaven. And so if I'm leaning into a narrative reality, the counsel of hopelessness, or even anchoring my identity in any facet of who the Lord has made me to be in my frame, whether that's a woman, whether that's someone in her 30s, a couple of gray hairs, that's wisdom, yes and amen.
Slicked back.
There you go.
Whether it's married, whether it's college educated, whether it's black, any of those things, if I attempt in my own strength to find the fullness of identity in that, an anchoring of hope there, it's dangerous, right? And so then it's the pivot by grace through faith to say, I know I'm professing this and I'm walking this out, that I'm a citizen, not of this age. I'm a pilgrim. I'm a sojourner. But Lord, I believe that you are a God who not only resides with me, but is watching what's happening. And so that my saying that I'm a pilgrim doesn't negate that there's wisdom, knowledge, and revelation for how to walk that out. Right. And so a place that I've been living has been the book of Ephesians, the letter to the church at Ephesus, has been such a critical, foundational place for me to anchor my hope and my faith, because talking about this gospel reality of reconciliation, the ministry of reconciliation that we become a part of, as understanding that we are disciples who are called to make disciples. You have in chapter 2, written to the Ephesians, the church at Ephesus, hey, Christ is our head. We are people who are brought together. The wall of hostility has been brought down. What I love that's written here is the first reminder of you were at enmity with God. Yeah. You were hostile in your members. You needed salvation. Right. You needed this gospel. And you need the Holy Spirit to keep walking this thing out, yeah, right? And then the next connection to that is all of these barriers, male, female, Jew, Gentile, slave, and free, all of these things that are not just sort of, to use popular language now, not just triggering now, not just painful now, but have been since the fall, right? Yeah. These realities of people being segregated in different ways, and with natural, very real, very tangible hostility laced into a cultural structure, boldly proclaiming that the cross was the place where those things were reconciled. And so there is no way apart from that to act reconciled. And so then the answer, as you read through, that I have found hope in as I've read through this letter, is in pointing us in how to live reconciled with each other, is to first live reconciled with God. And there isn't any confusion in the scriptures then if you're now looking, bringing Old Testament realities, New Testament realities, what does it look like to live as reconciled with God? Yeah. Now you have the power, now you have the instruction, now you have revelation and wisdom of what it looks like to live reconciled with others. And that love that we talked about before, that John 19 reality and the way we love each other, which is not just when things are peaceable or calm or without flashpoint, but is actually in this moment of crisis, also how you can think of really in the Ephesians 6 reality of contending for the faith and having that armor. What does it look like to fight for one another and for the kingdom? It gives you then this response of this is what it looks like to walk in such a way where this reality, this reconciled reality, is lived out. So that's sort of the background. So when I think of your question, Ruben, of, okay, how can we walk alongside you? I think it's to continue to call us and invite us and strengthen us in living reconciled with God and reconciled with you.
The gospel.
Living out the gospel. And it feels trite. You know, I honestly, like, it feels so trite oftentimes to say, like, okay, there is real angst and pain, whatever context you're from, where you have this whole load and this history and the earth groaning for a Messiah, the earth groaning for the return of Christ, whether we know that that's where we're going to pinpoint it or not. In him, we have hope, but being able to admit, like, I'm hopeless about this situation, or wow, that nicked me and that stung, or wow, that I felt the cling on my armor of that moment, right?
Yeah.
And so I think what it looks like for partnership is one, to walk in a way that Christ did, being a sympathetic high priest, saying, I'm going to sympathize, like you were sharing earlier, Ruben, and like that there's pain or hurt or angst or you know, a situation that needs companionship and a lifting of arms in that, but also reminding of us of who we are, reminding us of the glorious gospel that has been purchased for us. And reminding us that we're one under the headship of Christ Jesus.
I think it can be so easy to be like, well, I haven't experienced it, so I can't feel that pain.
Sure.
And it's so easy to then just step back and be like, bless you, I'll pray.
Yeah.
But in that kind of like nonchalant way.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like the Lord is so good at enabling our hearts to be moved when our brothers and sisters are actually in pain.
Yeah.
If, for example, my friend's husband dies, it's like, okay, I haven't experienced that pain.
Sure.
I never want to, but let me get in the grit and the tears and the snot with you and feel it as much as I can so that I can actually journey with you.
Yeah.
And I think that's what we can so forget to do and forget is even available for us as Christians. And I think that's what's missing right now.
It's
like we don't feel like we even have the door to do that because we're not allowing ourselves to.
And I think, too, that that's the point of prayer, is that I just personally, there have been times when praying for another people group, whether it was Israel or some other people group, and I felt nothing. I could not connect with what we were praying for, until I said, Father, by your Spirit, would you give me the prayers of Jesus for these people?
That's good.
That is really
and
good.
I'll never forget, we were in a set in a prayer room, and I remember asking that question, would you give me your prayers for your brothers, Jesus? And immediately, boom, something hits my chest, and I go into a travail.
Wow.
And I felt as if my own, like my own mother or my own father was perishing. And so it felt outside of myself, but in that way, like being a friend to Jesus, to sit with him and to wait with him in that place of prayer, I think is huge. It happened another time where a Hispanic ministry, a man came in and just sprayed bullets across the congregation. And around that same time, there were people, black men were getting shot in America, and there was all this uproar, and this was in 2016. And I remember feeling that, and I said, I have not wept for them while I am sitting and, you know, stewing in my own pain for our people group. There are other people groups who are in deep anguish right now. And so I said, Lord, give me the prayers, give me the tears for these people. And I kid you not, within a matter of seconds, I felt like something punched me in the chest, and
wow.
I fell out of my chair, and Tristan found me in the basement, like wailing out.
Wow,
and it wasn't because I willed myself to empathy. I couldn't do that, but it was the power of God in the place of prayer to ask God for his emotions and his prayers for those people.
You know, and I just, if I may keep pressing the awkward part of the conversation, and you know, like, you guys are amazing. I get to know you, and I love you. I trust you. Mm-hmm. You know, if my kids were with me and I had to leave, I would trust you with my kids, you know, because I know you. Mm. But the data, you know, shows that most Black people are fatherless, or there's a lot of fatherlessness. I don't want to say most. I actually don't know that much data. I know that about Honduras. I know that about other environments. But I know that there's a lot of fatherlessness that has lent itself to this kind of, I don't know, systemic practices that are common, right? And then that has created this stereotyped fear or distrust of a people group. Same here. I grew up in a community that didn't trust Hispanics. We were stealing their jobs, and we were, you know, you name it. I mean, every people group has its indictment if you're not the majority. And so I understand that experiencing stereotypes that aren't true. But that's something that I remember, you know, like I'm walking down the street. It's 7:30 p.m. It's about to get dark with my kids. And my son is ahead of me by a bit, and my daughter's behind me by a bit. And I see this young Black man approaching us from the front, and a guy who's white approaching us from the back. And as a father, you just got to have your kids close to you. But I remember trying to figure out which one to reach out to first, you know, and I just didn't know what to do, except I parsed the guy's running. I like to run. He's probably not going to try anything dumb. So I reach out for my daughter who's up front. And, you know, I just, that's part of what I realize. Like, you know, so much of these things that we fear is because we don't understand it, right? Mm-hmm. We don't know people. And therefore, we have a prejudice or a stereotype. And that's one of the things the Lord's been confronting my heart. Not just to the issue of racism, which, you know, to tell you that I'm not racist would probably be a pretty ostentatious statement. You know, I'm saying that just so that you can like me and I can look good in public. But if God asked, if he searched my heart, would he find any prejudice in there? And I've got to realize I probably do against somebody or something, you know. I mean, I just think about just in my marriage, there's all of this superiority complex, like I'm right, you're wrong. How much more is that exponentially out there? So I confront that with the gospel, and I realize I can't think that I'm better than others. I have to admit that I don't consider others as more important than myself. And in this case, I allow stereotypes to affect the way that I perceive. But the solution in my life, and I'm not saying this is right or wrong or enough, I'm just telling you how I've dealt with this issue that I've uncovered in my soul, mm-hmm. is I got to just get to know people.
Right.
Because in knowing them, I find you're not trustworthy.
Yeah.
But not because of the color of your skin or the stereotypes or the whatever, but because I know you. You mm-hmm. really did wrong. That you know what? I'm going to mm-hmm. be careful with my children, you know? And then I meet others and like, oh, you're really trustworthy. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't matter what your job is, whether you're college educated, whether mm-hmm. you're black, white, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, it's in knowing each other that it seems to emerge.
Yeah.
And so I think from my position, as we're navigating these issues,
yeah.
For me, the solution has been to just be more intentional in getting to know. And my confession to you is in doing that, I've zero experience a negative response from that mm-hmm. outreach. I've been actually quite shocked by how friendly the mm-hmm. black community has been in my community, you know, because I walk my dog with my kids a lot. Sure. I've been a lot more intentional. I notice there's a couple in the back and I say hi, and my wife says, I admire your flowers. And the response is more cordial than I expected. Mm-hmm. And the reason I wanted to say this publicly is because we're all afraid to talk about what we don't do, what we do do. And it, I mean, it's just yeah. the truth.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's one of those ongoing sort of Christian things that we all need deliverance from, that once we're saved, that we're not yet being sanctified. So we all, I'll confess to you too, Ruben, there are prejudices in my own heart, you know, different groups, whether it's age, whether it's region. I love the United States far more than I should. So even interacting with people who are not native to my nation, if at best I can be ignorant, and at worst, you know, prejudiced in a way that I operate. So I think really that, you know, there's hostility in our members from an existence prior to being born again. And the Lord is working that out in us. And to your point you made earlier, Georgiana, about, you know, how you enter into sort of hurt or angst with somebody, I think we need to, as believers, continue to ask the Lord for boldness. And because he told us to, because relationships are messy and relating with people is messy. And so there's going to be times where people are going to respond well, and there's going to be times when they don't, and yeah. bless God because of it. Right. And there's going to be times where we enter into conversations with people who are going through things that we don't understand, and it seems big and it seems loud, and we know we're going to say the wrong thing. There's no way I could say the right thing.
Yeah.
And if I'm embarrassed, if I'm humiliated, if I hurt or sting, that is not the end of the world, because we've been commanded to walk our lives in a certain way. And so when I think of that Ephesians 6 reality that I mentioned before, the whole armor of the Lord, it actually oftentimes points me to that Matthew 5 reality of the Sermon on the Mount, yeah. because ultimately Ephesians 6 is just Sermon on the Mount wrapped in armor. Like, yeah. right. this is how, like
awesome.
So when you think of it as you're contending, it's you're so looking good. At that Sermon on the Mount, and you're yeah. like, oh, you know, blessed are the peacemakers, Lord, give me boldness. Yeah. You know, like all of these different things, you know, you have this reality where he's commanding, you know, blessed are the poor in spirit. And so when we yeah. go into these things, that's faith, as we go into these relational dynamics, even stretching ourselves and saying, by faith, by the power of the spirit, I'm going to exercise my faith. And that looks right. like connecting with people who make me uncomfortable, right. and either rightfully make me uncomfortable because of experiences, or wrongly make me uncomfortable because it's stereotypical. But stereotypical baggage that I'm bringing with me, but I feel that way.
Yeah.
That's right. my response in my heart yeah. posture. So let's just call it what it is,
right.
and allow the cross to sanctify that, and just be obedient to the scriptures, knowing that the Holy Spirit's going to empower us. But I think if we are okay with leaning into that sometimes almost visceral discomfort that the cross requires of us, yeah. then we're going to actually see, for his name's sake, the truth that he promised.
Wow.
And so I think it's also a sort of a misapplication of meekness, or a misapplication of humility, to be avoidant of those situations when we're actually and I've done it. It's not,
yeah.
I mean, I don't think that, I think if everyone is honest before God, the lamp of the word peering into your soul, and, you know, we're laid bare before Christ, that these are some of the scenarios that we've had. And so now when I'm saying, okay, I know that I can put on this, I wear this helmet. I know I wear this breastplate. I know I have this sword. I'm undergirded, and I'm contending, and I can turn the other cheek. I can be made a fool of, because Christ was like,
right.
he's not unfamiliar with that reality of being humiliated for the glory of his Father. I don't have to shy away from that. And I think that is one of those places actually where that sense of identity and our citizenship finds tension, because to the point of what you were talking about, Ruben, earlier, of like of this reality of we're in this golden era, in a sense of there's access to so much, and if we don't tangibly have it, we can see it, and right. So it feels close. Whereas there's another kingdom that we're a part of, and we need to be reminded that as we're walking, you know, that's what we're placing our hope in, and that's what's driving us. And we have a king who knows what it looks like to be a part of a greater kingdom, to have everything, every good and pleasurable thing at his disposal and available to him. He governs it, and to walk with humility and meekness, and so we get to pattern our lives after him.
Yeah, and I'm also just reminded, you know, that there's a lot of talk about calling and purpose, destiny, and all of that, but for the believer, I'm just reminded 1 Peter 2:21, to this you have been called, since Christ also suffered for you, leaving you an example to follow in his steps.
And seems pretty simple, huh?
It's pretty simple, yeah. Pretty simple, you know. But when with what's charging so much of what's happening in the culture is that we don't take this as our calling,
right?
To suffer as Christ suffered. And there's all this talk about love one another, but Jesus didn't just say love one another. He said love one another as I have loved you.
Wow.
And so when he says this, he's telling them this during the Last Supper. And one version, I believe it's the NIV, it says, and he showed them the full extent of his love in this moment. And the Son of Man literally takes off his robe and begins to wash the feet of the one who's going to betray him, because he still called him friend.
Yeah.
He washes the feet of the one who's going to deny him with cursing. He washes the feet of those who are going to cower in fear. He's washing the feet of the one who's going to doubt that he actually rose from the dead. Yeah. I mean, there's the dynamics are so complex. Matter of fact, even there were disciples, they had arguments amongst themselves, political debates.
Yeah.
Who's going to be the greatest in the kingdom? They were literally just having that conversation before dinner.
Yeah.
Right. You know, and Jesus says, this is how you love one another.
Wow.
And if all of us take the position of Jesus to serve one another, not even with the expectation that it will be reciprocated, actually even expecting for us to be rejected, for us to be at least held at arm's length, arm's distance, but to even be hated and betrayed and slandered, but to actually take the yoke of Jesus in the place of servanthood and say, I'm gonna wash your feet. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna serve you as Christ served us. So
yeah.
That's so good. But okay, so good. I hear gospel centricity here, which it preaches good, it looks good on a promo video and those kinds of things. But like I wanna ask what many I've heard say that are hurting.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost fatalistic. It sounds almost like you're being a pacifist, mm-hmm. and you're just like giving up your opportunity to be a voice. How do you navigate that accusation?
Well,
you're so dependent on something that's an ancient document, but doesn't seem, at least for many, mm-hmm. you know, at least I've heard it this way, doesn't seem like it's enough. The scriptures aren't enough to deal with what's going on. I mean, just think about COVID. It's like, mm-hmm. well, God being a healer, that's like not enough theology for what we're dealing with right now. So just kind of hunker down and don't meet with anybody, you know? And so it's like all of our beliefs are being right now questioned. So there's also the question of, does the Bible actually have answers for us to deal with social, racial inequality? And if it does have answers, are they enough for what we're experiencing today? What would your answer be to that as we close this?
That's a tough question.
I personally have cried over this many, many, many times. We have cried together and screaming sometimes because of the level of, even the way Tristan and I grew up. Statistically, we are what should not be the way we're perceived. Our backgrounds are what would be common for, you know, it's the fatherlessness and all of those types of things. But even in my own anguish and pain about how do I even navigate this, the truth is no one's innocent. No one's innocent. There are no innocent parties in this in this whole dynamic. So if you're looking at Jesus, the whole point of reconciliation is being reconciled to God. And so the way I would deal with that accusation is not answer it. I'm experiencing the same pain, but there's only one person who has the answer. And so like Habakkuk, let's stand on our watch and see what he will say to us. You don't have the answer. I don't have the answer. There are no experts here. Let's just stand upon our watch to see what the Lord will say to us. And then when he does answer us, we will find that there are no innocent people. Gosh. There are no innocent ones.
Wow. I mean, that is such a profound statement you just made. And I just think about what we know is coming in the end, mm-hmm. persecution against the church. And what I hear from you, Brother Rick, and Cheersten, just that in many ways you're utilizing this as a preparation for even more dire times yet ahead for the church. Mm-hmm. And I just wonder how much our rawness as a church, you know, like that we can be Messiah in our society, how much that's going to actually hurt us when mm-hmm. the time of trial comes. Mm-hmm. And I'm sobered with you. Like I remember weeping when families were torn apart because there was a broken taillight and they mm-hmm. were deported and mm-hmm. their kids were with us crying, missing their parents. And like, so I understand that there's all kinds of injustices and there's a lot, but I love your posture that even as one who's subject to that kind of injustice, you're not looking for a societal solution. Mm-hmm. You're looking for Jesus to bring transformation to the whole planet. Mm-hmm. And primarily it begins with us.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
That was so good.
I want to continue this conversation next podcast. And I actually want to hear more about the role of politics. So we'll be talking about that in the next episode. But thank you so much for joining us.
You guys are going to join us next time.
Looking forward to it.
So go ahead and listen to our previous podcast if you haven't. You'll find them on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, any outlet that you have for podcasts. And you can even subscribe so that you get alerts when new podcasts come out.
And if you use Alexa, you can also use the Spotify app on Alexa to listen to us there. Just ask for the CBETS podcast.
Yes. And between these episodes, just like Rick mentioned, why don't you just ask the Lord to have his heart for different people groups and races and just the situations that are going on. We want our hearts to burn with what is burning on Jesus's heart, and we want to feel it and stand with our brothers and sisters in the midst of their pain. So until next time, see you next Friday, 2 p.m. Central Time.
That's right. Peace.